I do want to shift over to basketball because the schedule for the Iowa men's basketball team was released yesterday, and let me pull it up here. It's definitely going to be a weird season. I think we knew that to be the case with COVID, but we kind of have gotten a taste of what sports is like without fans and with COVID battling through postponements and cancellations. Took a long time to get the schedule. Iowa preseason ranked number 5 in the AP poll, ranked number 6 in the coaches poll. You commented to me a few weeks ago, you are typically a pretty big funnel before. Usually football comes first as it relates to your Hawkeye fandom. Is that accurate?
Typically, yeah.
And so this year, has the tide turned at all, given the hype?
I'm definitely a lot more excited this year just because of all the pieces that are coming back and the hype. So yeah, it's definitely a lot more fun when there's a Big Ten championship possibly, or a long run in the NCAA tournament, a possible Final Four. That definitely adds to it.
And so we finally got a look at the complete schedule. We don't know a couple of the dates and times. Actually, we don't hardly any of the times, but let me just run through the non-conference schedule here. So next Wednesday, the 25th, Iowa opens against North Carolina Central. That game will be 3:00 in the afternoon on Big Ten Network. The 27th, which is that Friday, they play Southern University, which is part of that MTE, the multi-team event there. That first, it's actually holiday weekend stretch there, 4 p.m. on that Friday, also on Big Ten Network. Western Illinois is supposed to be played as a third game. There's no date or time set for that game, but I'm assuming that will be like the 29th, theoretically. And then North Carolina. It's a shame that COVID's here because, boy, Carver would be absolutely rocking this year. Think about that North Carolina game. I mean, my goodness, the Tar Heels coming in, and that's a potential top 15 or better showdown. I think North Carolina's ranked around number 15. So that'll be the ACC Big Ten Challenge. They get Iowa State. That game also hasn't been set as far as a date. Most likely will be that Thursday, the 10th, but that's, I guess, speculation. It could be that Friday. They get Northern Illinois in Carver. They get Gonzaga. Obviously, that's the big one. That's the one that we've all been looking forward to in Sioux Falls. A little bit nervous about that game because of South Dakota's having a heck of a problem with COVID right now. And there have been a lot of teams that have opted out of the event there at that same event, or that same venue this next week, including, I think, West Virginia, or maybe it was Texas Tech opted out of that event. It was Texas Tech opted out of that event. You and I, Northern Iowa, opted in. There's been a lot of teams that have opted out due to the COVID concerns. That would be a terrible game to lose. I mean, potential number one. I think Gonzaga's preseason ranked number one. And then they start Big Ten play on December 22nd against Purdue. They don't get Illinois twice. That was a couple of the takeaways. Obviously, you play 20 Big Ten games. You're not going to play all 13 teams twice. So they play Illinois just once. That's interesting because Illinois, of course, supposed to be competing for a Big Ten title right there along with Iowa. They do play Michigan State twice. They get Ohio State twice. They get Indiana once, but it's on the road. They do get Northwestern twice. That's an advantage. Northwestern should be towards the bottom of the Big Ten. I think the whole Big Ten is going to be tough. Minnesota they get twice. Rutgers they get twice. Let's see. Wisconsin they get twice. Penn State they get once. Kind of would like to have Penn State twice, being that they lost their head coach during the offseason. Michigan, they get them just once on the road. Maryland, they get Maryland once. Probably a good thing. Maryland should be strong, I would think. That game's on the road. I think that's about it. It's going to be an interesting schedule. I tried to kind of compare Illinois, Michigan State, and Iowa's schedules together based on who they play once, who they play twice. I think they're pretty comparable. I was a little surprised the Big Ten didn't have Iowa and Illinois twice. I mean, last year, the Iowa and Illinois games, both of them were tremendous games. A lot of tension. It seemed like a kind of a newly formed basketball rivalry, which I thought was great because Illinois-Iowa should be a rivalry.
Yeah.
So I was a little surprised that the Big Ten didn't have them play twice. Also, given the regional advantages, Champaign being so close to Iowa City, also Nebraska, they only play once. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You'd think they try to limit travel. Instead, they've got them playing Rutgers twice. So I don't know what the Big Ten was doing. I don't know that either of us can really expect the Big Ten to do anything logical, because they've proven that logic is not always their strong suit. But what's your reaction to the schedule? And I mean, when you look at the top of the conference, the pecking order, Iowa, Illinois, Michigan State, Wisconsin, I mean, where do you see the cards falling with those four?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen the schedules for the other teams in general, but Iowa's definitely going for it as far as the non-conference. I mean, if you're confident with your team and you think that you have a good team and can make a long run, and you go ahead and schedule those big non-conference games, that's obviously going to go a long way. If they can have a good showing or win those games, there's going to be no doubt as far as a high seeding in the tournament. Whereas if they would have just basically played a bunch of not very good teams, obviously, even with the Big Ten schedule, someone probably could have an issue with that.
Wouldn't you expect, now, maybe it's a little bit of hype wanting to build it for a possible Big Ten tournament matchup, but again, Iowa, Illinois, by most pundits, are considered the two front runners in the Big Ten this year. Now, that may not pan out. It may be Michigan State, Wisconsin, or maybe even in Indiana, who's expected to be pretty good this year. But is it surprising to you that Iowa wouldn't play Illinois twice, just given TV ratings? You would think that'd be a matchup that the Big Ten would want to hype. And, you know, it's kind of like when Syracuse was top 10, Duke-Syracuse was always... I don't know if the ACC played, they couldn't play each other twice, but it seemed like they always played each other twice, and that helps TV ratings, even if maybe it doesn't, you don't like it from a competitive standpoint, you'd rather just see one game, it puts more emphasis on that one game, you'd think it would help TV. Are you surprised by that?
A little bit. I don't know if anything has to do with the Big Ten wanting to have as least amount of losses as possible for its main...
That's true, yeah.
The biggest teams this year. So, yeah, I don't know. Don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. But, yeah, you'd think for TV ratings that would be important to them as well. But
And so season expected to end. The Big Ten tournament is supposed to begin March 10th. I don't want to steer this into COVID because it's just pure speculation. But there have been some good news recently with vaccine-wise in the past couple of weeks, potentially. But I just wonder, with that news, I was a little bit surprised. I don't want to say surprised, but I thought, well, maybe there's a chance that the NCAA basically pushes the tournament back into April with the idea of, hey, maybe if we wait this thing out, we'll get enough people vaccinated where we can have fans. Do you foresee any scenario? Again, I know it's a guessing game. Do you foresee any scenario where maybe we get to March, Big Ten tournament, NCAA? By the way, the Big Ten tournament's in Chicago, not Indy this year. They just announced the other day that the NCAA tournament will be at one location, most likely Indianapolis. Do you think there's a chance we get fans at postseason games?
Whatever I think is complete speculation. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the Big Ten seems pretty against having fans other than family. So to me, if they're leery about having a football stadium filled in the outdoors, it would not make much sense to have a whole bunch of people indoors closer together at a basketball event. So
how many people you can get vaccinated, though. If they say the vaccine did come out, effective, safe vaccine came out in December, they start vaccinating the first responders and, you know, nurses and those people. How many people could get vaccinated by March? I guess that's my thinking. Maybe you get enough people where they say you have to have a certificate of vaccination to come to the game. I don't know. I guess that's my speculation.
Yeah, that's true. How do you prove that?
Maybe you get a little certificate. I don't know. Or maybe you get a stamp on your, like you're going to a party, you get a stamp on the back of your hand.
Yeah, I could.
I've been shot.
Those little bracelets.
Yes.
Like you're 21.
I've heard that. What did I hear that the other day? That there were people. Was it, they were talking about get-togethers, like parties, and I don't know if, what kind of parties they were, but that there were some parties where they actually handed out bracelets based on, like, one was green, one was like yellow, and one was red, and they were color charted based on like green is I'm very comfortable being close to you, red is stay away, and yellow is kind of somewhere in between. I don't know what people are. I don't know what people's minds are, but that's the world we live in. So, so the Gonzaga game. You know, it's interesting. That game is going to be a CBS game. It's going to be on the same day as the Big Ten championship game and the other Big Ten games. My big concern about that game. I think it's supposed to tip off at noon, I believe. If Iowa doesn't win the West, which I think we both agree they probably will not, I really hope they don't. I would think Iowa would do everything in their power not to schedule the football game in the early time slot so as not to interfere with basketball. I mean, have you thought about that as far as that the Champions Week?
I didn't realize it was the same day. So
December 19th.
Yeah, that would. That would be rough if you had to choose. Well, obviously, the Iowa-Gonzaga game is going to be a lot of fanfare for that. So, and if the Hawkeyes don't do really well in football the rest of the year, I think pretty much everyone knows what they're going to be watching. So,
I would think that Iowa would have, because, you know, the Big Ten title game, it's played at 7 o'clock. Right, or 7:30 on Fox every year in Indy. I would think, being that they're doing this 8+1 schedule with Champions Week, I would think that they would have the power, Iowa would have some power and leverage to say, look, we're not playing 11 a.m. game. We'll play a 3 o'clock game or a 4 o'clock. Or they could play in the evening. I don't know why you couldn't play at the same time as a Big Ten championship. I mean, I don't know why they couldn't do that. So the only problem is, boy, you get into December trying to play a night game outside December 19th. I mean, the Big Ten championship game will be indoors, but
yeah,
that could be, you know, say they play, you know, Michigan up in Ann Arbor and they're playing.
The NFL does it.
They do. Yeah, you're right. They do. I think it'd be cool to see a snowy game. You know, we never see, you ever notice that? We've had games. I remember 2000, I think it was 13. Iowa set the record, the first game for the hottest game on record at Iowa. And then the last game against Michigan was the coldest game on record at Iowa.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the same year.
Same year. And we don't get snow here. You notice that during the season, we rarely get snow that affects a game. My question to you is, I remember the 2015 Iowa-Purdue game, sealed the division for Iowa. I was at that game. There was ice all over the bleachers. I don't know if you were there. But that was a game that they had a lot of snow the night before. But would they play through? Do you know, would they play through snow just like the NFL would if it was snowing during the game, or would they postpone the game?
I would assume that they would play through as long as it's just snow. I mean, I know if it's has lightning or something like that, they have to call it. But I would think with football, I mean, if it's raining or if it's snowing, that they would continue to play.
So that'll be interesting. I when the schedule first came out for football, I thought, boy, you're going to be playing more December games than typical, and who knows what bowl games will look like. A lot of bowl games have been canceled. I wonder if there won't be bowl games. A lot of people talk about Iowa, Iowa State. Maybe you play down in Wells Fargo Arena, and I mean, I don't know if that would work. It'd be could you play Iowa, Iowa State at Wells Fargo? Could you play Iowa, Iowa State at Wells Fargo? I mean, they hosted the Barnstormers for years. Could you do that?
I don't know. I'm not sure what the regulations are for that. But, I mean, it seems like it'd be more of an exhibition game. But I guess that's what bowl games are anymore. So,
especially this year. One more note before we move on from the schedule. The Iowa, let's see here. Let me find it here. The Iowa, Iowa State game. Mentioned that does not have a day scheduled yet. Most likely it'll be December 10th or the 11th. Iowa, of course, dominated the series in basically every sport. Now they've only, I say dominating, men's basketball, they won the last two matchups. This is going to be an interesting year because obviously Iowa has home court advantage, but home court advantage is so much different this year than typical, and I don't know how much of it's home field advantages in football. Have you seen anything this year in any – now, there have been some fans at some games in football. Have you seen any games without fans where home field advantage was really a thing? And if so, do you think it'll be any factor in the Iowa State game or any of Iowa's games this year, basketball-wise?
I know at football at the beginning of the year, the road teams were actually winning. So it didn't seem like there was much for home field advantage without fans in the stands. I would think for basketball, it probably would be the same. I mean, it would be a weird feeling. It'd almost be like a pickup game scrimmage type of a thing with a few people cheering in the background. So, I would think it probably would be more difficult to get up for a game. And so, if you're playing an opponent that you don't respect, I can imagine that it'd be easier to maybe fall behind or not play as well. I would think maybe a home team might actually have a little bit of a disadvantage just because they don't have as much, I don't know, as many people cheering or less excitement, so that they might not be as prepared, maybe. I don't know.
One thing I did note from the NBA bubble down in Orlando was team shot great, which you'd think that offense would be rusty coming off a long break like the NBA had. But one thing the players talked about in that bubble situation was how they were playing. That was what they considered to be a shooter's gym, and I'm guessing it's because of the dark background behind the backboard.
Okay.
So I would guess, just like any year, again, the crowd won't be a factor, but I would guess that certain gyms will be better for a team like Iowa that has a lot of shooters, as opposed to a Rutgers, which is more of a grinded-out defensive team. But I agree with you. Other than that, I don't know what – it's just too bad, again, because of COVID, that Iowa-Iowa State game, which you know would be sold out, it would be rocking. You know the North Carolina game would be sold out and rocking. I mean, that Gonzaga game, can you imagine how many Iowa fans would go to Sioux Falls for that Gonzaga game? I mean, there wouldn't be hardly any Gonzaga fans in Sioux Falls. It would be all Iowa fans. That place would be – the roof would come off that place.
Why did they choose Sioux Falls? That makes no sense to me.
Well, that's the Sanford Pentagon, and Iowa played there 2 or 3 years ago against Colorado.
Pretty good
event, and Sanford Pentagon has become a real, really, really good college basketball arena. I don't know what the history of the Sanford Pentagon is. I should research that, but they're also hosting that other event this next week that's got some big names: West Virginia, Northern Iowa, quite a few big name teams. It's supposed to be a pretty big, big time arena. The problem right now is South Dakota is, I think, the worst state in the U.S. right now for COVID per capita or something like that. So I don't know. I know Iowa has said that they've had 7 of their guys already get COVID, and that was like 2 months ago. So if 7 of the players have gotten COVID, I know that doesn't really make a difference as far as contact tracing, but I almost think maybe most of the guys have gotten it and maybe are immune to it by now. But there's going to be, you know, if your opponent gets it, we've seen that with football this year. If your opponent gets it, you're out. I hope that the Big Ten, I mean, I haven't looked real closely at the schedule, but I hope basketball, they're able to make up games that get canceled, because there's going to be games that get postponed, games that get canceled. I hope that they're able to make those up.
You would think that there would be enough leeway between the days in the length of the schedule that they would be able to make up some of those games.
As far as the roster is concerned, I mean, we obviously the guy in the middle that you and I were talking about before we started recording, Luka Garza. I don't know what we can really say about Luka Garza. I think he's on track to be the most dominant player in Iowa history. Decided to come back for his senior season despite the uncertainty. or maybe because of the uncertainty with the NBA draft. Connor McCaffrey is going to be a redshirt junior. He showed leaps and bounds of improvement last year. Really a good facilitator. Doesn't blow you away with athleticism or shooting ability, but seems to be a guy that I was comfortable with basically at any position. You've got Joe Wieskamp, of course, preseason All Big Ten. C.J. Frederick is back this year. Had a tremendous redshirt freshman year. Bohannon's supposed to be healthy. He's had both hips operated on. Jack Nungy's coming off a torn ACL. Before last year, Fran had basically said that he thought Jack Nungy was the second best player on the team. Which, you know, maybe he's not going to be the same after coming off a knee injury, but my goodness, if the seven-footer is the second-best player on the team and the team features the likes of Bohannon, Frederick, Garza, Wieskamp, that excites me. And then, of course, Joe Toussaint, he's like a miniature version of Hulk Hogan. He's just, I don't know if you've seen this guy, he's just ripped. And yeah. Quick as can be, obviously needed to improve his shooting a bit, but I don't know how much they're going to need him to shoot. I mean, obviously you want to be able to shoot as a point guard when you're open, but I remember Anthony Cowan, Maryland star point guard last year, made the comment that Joe Toussaint was the toughest guy he had to guard all year. And that says a lot because Cassius Winston from Michigan State, Penn State always produces great guards. I'm sure they play guys in non-conference. That was an impressive statement from a guy who's extremely quick in Cowan. What are your big thoughts on the roster? I mean, I know it's loaded from a visual standpoint. COVID could change things, but maybe what are your keys roster-wise?
I was just trying to figure out the starting five because they could go a few different ways.
Yeah.
If they wanted to go big, they could have Garza and Nungy, especially if Nungy has the high praise that McCaffrey has said. Or if they basically wanted to go Garza and then a whole bunch of three-point shooters, that would be interesting. Garza and then have, well, because they said that Garza has worked a lot on his passing, so he's probably expecting it to be doubled down there. And then if he can kick it out to four or five, or I guess not five, but 4 3-point shooters, and then there's definitely some potential there.
So in case people don't know, Jordan Bohannon is on track to maybe be the leader, all-time leader in Big Ten history in three-point shots made. He's already the leader in Iowa history in three-point shots made. C.J. Frederick led the Big Ten last year in three-point percentage.
Yeah.
Luka Garza was a pretty good three-point shooter last year. Heard great things about his ability to shoot this year. Toussaint, of course, we expect him to improve. Wieskamp was expected to be the best player on this team last year heading into the season. Obviously known to be more of a three-point shooter, I would say. I mean, I think he needs to improve with some other aspects of his game. He struggled late in the year. But you just look at those guys. I mean, I'm with you. I don't know who you start. I don't think Joe Toussaint's going to start. I wish he would because I think he deserves it, and I think they need him. They need him to play. I think they need Joe Toussaint to play 25 minutes a game, and I don't know where. I don't know how he's going to get 25 minutes a game because – who do you set? I mean, if I had to make a prediction of what the starting lineup is going to be, it would be Bohannon at the one, Frederick at the two, Wieskamp at the three, Connor at the four, and Garza at the five.
Why would Connor play four?
Well, he played four a lot last year. Who else are you going to play at the four if you're not playing Nungy?
Wieskamp? Probably Connor, Wieskamp, and have Connor be point guard.
I hope that's not what listen, Fran knows what he's doing. Last year, they played a lot with Toussaint. Now, granted, they didn't have Bohannon last year. They didn't have Nungy last year. But they played a lot of Toussaint at the one, Frederick, Wieskamp, Connor at the four, Garza at the five. Connor held his own at the four. There's a lot of small ball being played in college basketball in the NBA right now. So, you know, he's 6'5", strong kid. I'm sure he's increased his strength in the offseason. If I had to make a prediction, it's Bohannon, Frederick, Wieskamp, Connor, and Garza.
Yeah, that would be my prediction, too, for the five. I mean,
but you would just like Connor. So you'd put Bohannon at the two, then?
I mean, he probably could play point guard, too, but
Where does Connor go, then?
Well, I mean, didn't Connor have, like, the best assists per turnover ratio last year? So
he did, but I don't remember him playing much point guard. I mean, he did here and there, but I think
he would kind of be the game manager of, I don't know, get the ball to the shooters or get the ball to Garza. So
those are the two options on this team. Shooters, Garza. That's basically. Yep. I think now I will agree with you on this. Playing Connor at the four definitely could come back to bite Iowa. I mean, they did it last year. But there are going to be games where they're going to need Jack Dungy. And that's why I hope Dungy is back because, I mean, you've seen it with guys in the NBA. When you have serious knee injuries, sometimes you're not the same after. And I hope that's not the case with Dungy. I think it was C.J. Frederick made a comment to his uncle last year before the season started. His uncle asked him, well, who's really looking good right now preseason? And he said, man, Jack Dungy is going to be an NBA player. And he said that. And, you know, that I remember, I mean, just the few games we saw Dungy last year didn't totally look like he had caught his groove yet, but it was so early. And then he goes down with the knee injury. I just know he's just, to me, he's the wild card. Now, those are the starting. So I think we can agree those are probably I don't think Dungy, what would you be your prediction? Would you put Dungy in that starting five, or would you say Connor, Bohannon, Frederick, Wieskamp, Garza? Because that's still a small lineup playing CJ at the three and Wieskamp at the four.
Yeah, I agree. If you take Dungy out there, it is a small lineup. So, I mean, but you could have, if you have two people that are 6'11", 7 foot, obviously you would think that lineup. Would. Yeah, that would improve rebounding, you'd think. It would you'd think it'd be a defensive presence as far as driving in, but if he plays as well, I could see him going into the starting lineup because I don't think that they probably want to have it where Dungy is just the backup for Garza and not have to play together.
I think if you can channel the Iowa Twin Towers. I don't know how you. And I agree. I mean, I think the ideal lineup, honestly, I've thought, well, maybe Fran will sit Connor. Maybe he'll have Connor be a sixth man. I don't think that will probably. I've also thought, well, maybe Bohannon's a sixth man. If I had to pick my perfect lineup of what I. And again, I'm not there at practice. I would like to see Toussaint start at the one, Frederick at the two, Wieskamp at the three, Dungy and Garza. And yeah, I know that's no Connor and no Bohannon. I think both those guys would be good off the bench. I really do. Now, I don't think you're probably going to do that. I don't think Bohannon's playing off the bench being that he's one of the highest scoring players in Iowa history. But
yeah,
I don't know. I
don't think he'd want to come back for his sixth year to be a bench player.
Do you think that... I don't know. I worry about. I shouldn't say I worry. I have worried about Toussaint from a position of, if he played as well as he played last year, and he had ups and downs. Being a kid from New York, and he with his skill set, if he's not playing this year, would he look at, transferring? I don't think he should, because the thing about it is Bohannon's gone next year.
Yeah,
that's going to open up a lot of playing time.
I would guess with starting the preseason rankings at number five, you've got to be all in on this. Whatever your role is,
right?
Because next year Bohannon's gone and other people are gone. Obviously, he's going to have plenty of time to play. So you would think that you would not enter the transfer portal.
I would hope not.
Five-ranked team. Because you're not getting minutes. That doesn't make sense. But
well, how many minutes are there in a basketball game for five guys? 200? Is it 200? No, it'd be see, 40 minutes times 5. Yeah, 200.
Okay, yeah.
So 200 minutes. Okay, how many minutes does Garza get?
Very close 35. To 200. I mean...
You mean 40.
Or 40, yeah, yeah.
So I'd probably say 38, 37. I think he's going to be... He's not going to need to set. I mean, when is he going to need to... Honestly, from a stamina standpoint, I don't think he's sitting on the bench.
Well, his workout routines, if those videos mean anything, are pretty grueling. So my guess is stamina's pretty good right about now.
Yeah. So if he's getting... Let's give him 38 minutes, okay? So say you play Connor... Let's round it down to 35. We'll say he sets 5 minutes. Just to make it even. Okay, 35 minutes. Wieskamp. You probably got to give Wieskamp 30 minutes at least, right?
Yeah.
That's 65. Frederick, don't you got to play him 30 minutes?
You would think any starter would be 30 minutes.
Okay, so the problem is, if you play everybody, well, Garza, I think, is at least 35. But if you play every starter 30 minutes, what is that? 5 times 3, so it's 150 minutes. And then if Garza plays an extra 5, so even if the other starters only play 30 minutes apiece, Garza plays 35, that's 155. That means it's only 45 minutes to spread amongst Toussaint, Nungi, Patrick McCaffrey, the 5 freshmen. Now, I don't think all 5 freshmen would play if it weren't for COVID, but being that it's a free year, I think they'll all play and they may all be needed. I'm just saying Toussaint, I think doesn't Toussaint deserve at least 20 minutes in a game? But he's not going to get it. I mean, he's not going to get 20 minutes if you're playing everybody else 30. I mean, you know,
I mean, maybe they, here's the thing. It seems like in years past when they literally tried to give minutes to like 11 or 12 guys,
it didn't
work out real well. So you're not going to really have a great flow, I would think, if you play for a minute or two and then you go and sit. It seems like it'd be very disjointed. But I don't know. I mean, because right now, Fran has said that everyone's all in. So, I mean, that's what, total about, 12, 13, 14 guys?
Well,
I mean,
let me count this here, because not counting the walk-ons. Toussaint, Nungi, Bohannon, Euless, Frederick, Wieskamp, Perkins, Keegan Murray, Chris Murray, that's 9. Patrick's 10. Ogundele's 11. Connor and Luca, that's 13.
Yeah, you're not going to... Yeah, guys, what is that? 15 minutes per one. I mean, it's not going to be even. So
I think it comes down to, I don't know how many guys have had COVID, but there's the chances are somebody's going to get COVID during the year, and it may take 2 or 3 guys out at a time. Somebody's going to get hurt. That's the reality of basketball and esports. Somebody's going to get hurt. So it's nice having the luxury of, hey, I can play all 5 guys and still redshirt them, basically.
Yeah.
How familiar are you with the 5 freshmen?
I've read about them a little bit, but it seems like they're all in the mix and are all playing pretty well, but I don't know too many details.
Aaron Euless, more of a natural point guard, from what I understand. Obviously, the younger brother, Tyler Euless, who Iowa nearly stole from, well, Kentucky actually stole him from Iowa, and of course now he's in the NBA. Tony Perkins, athletic freak. If you just watch Tony Perkins highlights on YouTube, you'll see him dunking over guys, and he's not that tall. He's 6'4". Sounds like he's maybe the most athletic guy on the team. Keegan and Chris Murray are obviously the kids of Kenyon Murray, identical twins. Keegan is the lefty. Chris is the righty. Kind of play similar. I think Keegan's more of a 3-point shooter, where Chris is more of a slasher, from what I understand. And Ogundele is an interesting one. Of course, we had him on our podcast several weeks back. He was the guy that I really think is maybe the most important freshman, because if you look at Iowa from a front court perspective, you said, well, how are you playing Connor at the four? My question to you is, Wieskamp's not a natural four. Who do they have besides Garza and Nungi who are true four or fives?
Yeah, they don't.
They don't. I mean, Patrick 6'8", he's not a four. I mean, he's definitely a three, maybe even two on some days. I think he's a natural three. Wieskamp's a natural three. Connor's can play three. He's, you know, 6'5", can play the four, but he's not a natural four. That's what I'm saying. I think Ogundele, and that's the only thing, if I was to pick something that makes me nervous about, besides the COVID situation, that makes me nervous about this team right now, is Fran keeps talking about how Ogundele is behind because he got here late from England. He got sick. Sounds like he got COVID when he got over here, and he's just been behind everybody else. I mean, I hope that doesn't come into play. I wonder if size could become an issue. What if Nunchi blows out his knee game two? I mean, anything could happen, and Garza could blow out his knee. I mean, we hope that doesn't happen. But say Nunchi does blow out his knee again, they're going to be, and again, they're right back to the situation they were last year. But this year they'll have Big O down low, Josh Ogundele, to maybe make amends there. So I think he's the most important of the five freshmen right now.
Yeah, I mean, as far as having centers and power forwards, Iowa doesn't have a plethora of them. So you would think that he would definitely get some playing time. It sounds like the Murray brothers, from what I've heard and read, are pretty good at rebounding. So I guess that would definitely help out as well if they need at least some other rebounders in there.
One thing that I've been happy to hear, I'm always happy to hear this. Obviously, Iowa's big knock has been over the years, especially over the last 5 years, has been defense. Yeah. And it really seems, I mean, past few years, every year I hear a little bit more from the coaches and players. For a while, almost like that first year with Bohannon and Jock and those guys, like their defense was terrible. But it's like nobody wanted to talk about it, at least not to the press. It's like it was never, Fran always was like, you know, if we play better on the offensive end, then we don't allow runouts. And it was never like we need to play better team defense. And it always concerned me. It's like, is he in denial? And then every once in a while he'd mention, well, he'd be better defensively. It seems like over the last 3 years, every year we hear a little bit more emphasis placed on defense, which I think, shouldn't that be half your emphasis, I would think? I mean, it's half of the game. Garza has been, if you listen to any interview with Garza, everything is defense, defense, defense. Basically, every guy has said that. And Fran has said that. So that's encouraging to me. It sounds like they've really taken it, and I have no doubt that Garza has taken it seriously. It sounds like, you know, because there have been reports in the past, former McCaffrey players that have said that very little of McCaffrey's practices are defensive drills, which is concerning when I heard that. I don't know if you remember. I don't know who that was that said that, but it sounds like that's becoming more of a emphasis. I think Iowa was like 107 overall out of like 300-some teams last year, which sounds really bad, and it's not great, but it's a lot better than where they were 2 or 3 years ago. But a team has never won the national title, and very few, like one team on record, I believe, has been to the Final Four with that low of a defensive rating. How high does Iowa need to bring that rating? They're at 107 right now. How high do they need to be, assuming they have a top five offense in the country? How high do they need to be defensively in order to make that Final Four run, in your mind?
I thought I heard a stat that said that the lowest ranked defense to still make a Final Four or to win a championship was 47th. And so I would think that they would probably have to be at least top 50 in order to get to that level.
You think they can be? I mean, that's a big, that is a big, they've made strides. That's a big jump.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you would think that, if they just try to outscore every team, that's what they've done in the past. And I mean, they've had some good teams, and then at the end of the year, they just kind of fizzle because either they're, I don't know, not conditioned well enough or for whatever reasons, but But I mean, so you have to have enough defense in there in order to shut down the other team. So I don't know if that's that big of a jump as possible. But Fran was saying that having the extra players will help with depth, which will help keep guys fresh. But I'm not sure. I mean, again, COVID aside, I guess you have to start seeing it before you start anticipating a rise to one of the better defensive teams.
I'm with you. They've got to make that jump. It's just a huge jump. People don't realize how big of a jump that is. And I think part of it just comes down to athleticism. And that's why I really do hope that a guy like Tony Perkins is good enough offensively and strong enough physically to play this year, because I think with his athleticism, he's going to be a guy who can probably be a shutdown. I'm assuming this can be a shutdown shooting guard from a defensive standpoint. I think Joe Toussaint has proven that he's the best defender on this team. Frederick was good. I think Wieskamp, I liked him defensively his freshman year, was not very impressed with him last year defensively. Garza obviously needs to get better. I think he's probably gotten better. Nungi, when he played, my big thing with Nungi is he played smaller than 6'11". He played almost like he was 6'5". And that was my only thing with him. Bohannon's, I mean, there's been talk about Bohannon, why he struggled defensively because of his hips. I don't mean to knock Jordan Bohannon. I think he's struggled defensively because he's not a good defender. I mean, to me, he's just not very athletic. Okay, we know he's not quick. Maybe the hip surgeries will help him defensively, but that's my big issue with Jordan is, do you really want to start him and take Joe Toussaint, the best defender on this team, out of the ball game just because Jordan Bohannon can shoot threes so well? I mean, I don't know.
It all depends what your game plan is.
If you plan on scoring 100 a game, then
yeah,
I guess you can afford it. But I don't know. It's going to be unique. And one guy we haven't talked about, Patrick McCaffrey.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you ever saw him in high school, but we don't have a whole lot of college tape to look at. He played a couple games last year before being basically shut down for health reasons. What do you see him bringing to the table? I mean, he's a guy who is long, he can shoot, but where does he fit into the mix, you think?
Not sure. Maybe similar to a Joe Wieskamp, maybe a little taller version of Joe Wieskamp. Sounds like he has put on some muscle, but as far as like his high school tape, he was very thin. So, I'm not sure. I haven't seen enough tape to know. Sounds like he was a pretty good shooter and scorer, but
Shoots a little low. He's got kind of a low release. Something that I noticed last year that a little bit concerning to me. I mean, you don't often see guys besides Sean Marion succeed with that really low shooting stroke. But he is 6'8", so he's got length to be able to shoot over guys still.
Yeah.
And he is more of a 3. I mean, he's not a 4. It'd be nice if he could play 4, spot 4 here and there, but you said it yourself, he has gained some weight. He just looked like skin and bones his freshman year and going back into high school.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think we've seen enough on tape to really know what exactly the game plan is for him and how many minutes he's going to have. Sounded like Fran was excited about his progress, but then again,
Fran's excited about everything every year. Fran's, you know, Kirk likes to, kind of downplay expectations. Fran, well, you've seen Fran, and I like it. I mean, I like the fact that Fran is always like, do you see if Iowa's football team was projected as number 5 in the country, would Kirk go schedule Alabama?
No.
No, he would not. But Fran went and scheduled, and anybody who wants to say it's Gary Barta making these decisions is full of nonsense. Fran went and scheduled Gonzaga, And yeah. I know the ACC Big Ten Challenge is based on matchups, but that Gonzaga game, I remember when I heard that, I thought, attaboy. That is exactly what you need to do.
Well, that shows confidence in his team. Because if he did not feel like they were going to be that good, why do that to yourself?
Right. So. And I think the big thing is, win or lose that game, it's a plus. I don't think that game doesn't hurt you. You know what game? You know games that hurt you? Arkansas Pine Bluff. Chicago State, the Citadel. Those are games that hurt you because you win, they don't mean anything. You lose, it's terrible. So Gonzaga, it doesn't hurt you.
I mean, if they get totally whacked, taken woodshed by Gonzaga,
that won't be good.
That's going to open some people's eyes of, wait a minute. But if they are competitive, you're not going to lose if you're at least competitive with the number one team in the country.
Give me a quick prediction, Iowa or Gonzaga. If you had to pick that game. Honestly, you had to pick that game right now.
Well, I would say Iowa just because I'm a homer, but... but I don't know enough about Gonzaga to know. I know that every
they got a lot coming back. They got a lot coming back.
Well, it seems like they're pretty highly ranked every year. But
Final Four team every year, basically.
But I don't know if a lot of it is just the name pedigree, where kind of like Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina. They're always ranked, and sometimes they're very, very good. But
Duke very rarely underachieves. And honestly, if you look at Gonzaga, they very, very rarely underachieve. Gonzaga is one of those teams every year I root against all year because I always want highly ranked teams to lose. So it helps Iowa. And they never lose. They just don't lose. It's amazing. You'd think, okay, they play in the West Coast Conference. At some point, they're going to get complacent when they're playing on a Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern time at the University of Loyola Marymount. You would think at some point they're going to get complacent, and they just steamroll teams. And that's why when I saw that Iowa had scheduled that game, there is not a game. And you could say, well, Duke would have been a better schedule, I don't even know. I mean, Villanova might have been a better. That Gonzaga game was the best game Iowa could have scheduled. And I really believe that. Preseason ranked number one. Duke in the ACC Big Ten Challenge was an option already at the time. We didn't know if Iowa had a chance of playing Duke. Of course, they played North Carolina anyway. So I think just kudos to Fran. And that game is going to be, again, it's not a do or die game because it's in December. But boy, you get that spotlight. And I think it helps recruiting. That's my big thing with Kirk every year. If you play Alabama, okay, you get waxed. But you're going to be playing Saturday night on ABC. Now, Iowa gets Saturday night games on ABC anyways. But to get that game early on, those are the types of games recruits want to play in. I just think it helps. I don't know what the downside of scheduling games like that. I just like Fran's attitude. And he's done that. Fran, his first year here, didn't produce a real tough schedule for his team. And I remember him saying, he's just like, well, we weren't ready for it. That we put together a schedule that was appropriate for our team. And he did the same this year. He followed through with that. And let's be honest, if Iowa had a more than a 7-game conference schedule and they got to play in that Big East, Big Ten Challenge, which I wish we would still be able to see with the Gavitt games, it'd probably be Villanova or Creighton, who are top 15 teams. You'd probably see, they'd probably schedule another team, maybe not Virginia is pretty highly ranked, but they'd play somebody else as well. They did what they could do, and you're going to have to play some cupcakes with North Carolina Central and Southern. They're going to have to play a couple of those games. So I'm thrilled with the schedule. Obviously, I'm thrilled with the roster. Minutes are going to be interesting to see. But I just hope I don't want to sound negative. I hope we get a season. I think we're going to get a season. I mean, I don't see things getting shut down. Do you?
Well, I mean, hard to tell, but... You would think that trying to manage 14 players rather than 100 players would be easier. As far as getting sick or not, right. So as long as as the college students do their best not to go out and get sick, that they try to be responsible, you would think that that would be the best way of having the season. But
one thing I will say this, and this is this goes without saying, of course, we're all dealing with the loss of your dad right now, Eric. And I know this has been harder for you than anybody can understand. It's going to be hard for me. It's obviously already been hard for me as a good friend of mine, losing Leon. One thing that I was thinking about yesterday, though, and it made me smile, it made me just, you know, again, bring back good memories. And one thing I'm going to miss this year is, I don't know if you know this, but he came over for almost every basketball game last year, almost everyone. And, you know, I would have obviously was looking forward to watching Iowa with him this year. And he was looking forward to watching Garza and the Hawks. But I was reflecting back with Tiana on last year on some of the best memories that I'm going to have as far as watching games with your dad, because I don't know, obviously I'm sure you've watched hundreds of different sporting events with your dad over the years. Did you guys watch more baseball? Was that more of what you guys spent time together doing?
Yeah. Growing up, it was mostly watched baseball. Yeah.
It's funny because he got into basketball more than I ever thought he would. I mean, he'd be jumping up, woohoo! You know, he'd just be going nuts. And I'm like, this is so funny to watch Leon get this excited about it. He had a game, so we had our meeting down in Des Moines. We had a game, that was the day of the Iowa-Nebraska Black Friday game.
Okay.
And that was one of the best memories I'll have, just spending time with your dad. Tiana took our car home. I rode with your dad. We left the meeting, turned on the radio, listened to the football game, drove to Wiginpen in Ankeny, watched the rest of the Iowa-Nebraska football game, ate an entire Wiginpen pizza between the two of us. Then we drove. I don't exactly remember the exact order of events here. Then rode back with him, drove back to Ames. He like dropped me off at my house, and then like an hour later, he came back over to the house to watch Iowa versus San Diego State basketball. And I look back and I think, you know, that's such a me thing to do. But just the fact that your dad, 73 at the time, was doing that, I think is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and he'd come over with Fairway popcorn. He loved it. Okay. He always tell me how he's like, he would never take chips. I'd offer him chips. I'd say, every time he'd come over, I'd grab a bag of chips. I'd say, chips are like, no, I don't want chips. Why are you always asking me that? Don't, trying to force stuff on me. And I'm just like, well, I just have a few chips. I don't want any chips. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with chips, Leon? They're not good for you. And then he'd pull out this big bag of popcorn from Fairway. There was prepackaged. But he would tell me, he's like, you know, look at the back of this bag. He's like, there's no high fructose corn syrup. He's like, it's all made with natural stuff. It's incredible. And it's funny. Tiana would clean the house and she'd pull up the couch and there'd be popcorn underneath the couch. And I'd look at her and say, that's Leon. So, and then I remember, it's funny because I said, you know, he came almost for every game. And sometimes we'd have another, like Brandon Hewen would come over for a game. Peter Green came over for a game or two with Leon and I. There'd be games that Leon and I both missed. Maybe we'd have a meeting and we couldn't watch the game. And we'd both like try to avoid watching the score or avoid hearing the score. I remember one day Iowa had played Michigan State and we were both trying to avoid hearing the score throughout the day. Of course, that never works out. And we heard the score of the game. But I remember one game, Iowa, and I just have it. He kind of, it's funny, Leon was someone that my memory, maybe you're the same way. My memory is very much like Leon's in that, and he's one of the few people that can understand where I'm coming from with this. And it's not because I just don't try to remember things. But my memory can be very poor. I forget where I put my phone or my keys or my wallet. I may have a pen and I'm writing and I set it down and I can't find it in my own lap, right?
Yeah.
But yet I can remember, I think you are similar to this in this regard. I can remember sporting events from specific years. Not just Iowa, just random sporting events, sports and music. Like my series of time is my timeline is kind of based off of what happens with music and sports. I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
But he was kind of the same way. Do you have some of that as well in your mind?
Yeah. Yeah. Growing up a fan of baseball and statistics and years and certain things. I mean, anyone who's a fan of baseball pretty much or sports in general, you remember certain years, you remember certain stats, you remember certain things that that are important to you. And so it's easy to kind of base your memory off certain stats and things like that.
I remember one game last year. He was supposed to come over to watch the game, but it was terrible weather out. I mean, it was, Iowa, probably, 4 or 5 inches of snow that night, and Iowa beat Michigan at home. And I called Leon that afternoon. I'm like, hey, you coming over for the game? He's like, well, I'd like to, but I, it's something about I don't want to drive in the weather. I'm like, okay, I'll come down and pick you up. So I ended up going all the way down to his place, picking him up, driving him all the way up here. We watched the game, and then I drove him home, and the roads were bad that day. But it took a lot for him not to watch the Iowa basketball team. So I know he was looking forward to this season, and so it's gonna be weird for me. I keep saying this to Tiana. It's gonna be weird for me. And with COVID, we probably couldn't have watched the games together anyways. But it's just going to be weird not having him watching the game with me. I mean, he came over. I mean, he probably the last 2 or 3 years, even when I was single, he came over for a lot of the games. So it's going to be weird. It's going to be, not having him next to you watching the game is going to be tough. But it's going to be an incredible basketball season nonetheless. And it will be a memorable one. I mean, just with COVID and the expectations, I hope this team doesn't fall flat on its face. Is there any way you see that happen? I guess I can't, I'm trying to tamper my expectations a little bit, but I guess I'm not really. Is there any way you see this season just completely derail?
define derail.
End up being a bubble team. That's derailing. I mean, that's completely derailing. Am I right? They're projected to maybe be in the final four. If they end up being in the bubble, that's derailing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can see that. A few years back, I mean, at one point they were 3 in the country and then they just fell off the face of the earth. So I would hope that they have enough, at least expertise, enough playmakers to not let that happen. But Iowa hasn't been to the Sweet 16 in goodness, was it 30 years, something like that, or more longer? So,
they haven't won the Big Ten regular season title in 40 years.
Yeah. So, kind of hard to have a super high or a lot of confidence in your high expectations when they haven't really been achieved. I mean, I'm a Cubs fan, so in 2016, when they were in the World Series, it was kind of hard to have a lot of confidence that they were going to win, even when they were ahead. So, obviously, when things are when they have a proven track record, you tend to have more confidence than when they don't.
Does it seem to you like Iowa, as fans, and again, I'm not in touch with other fan bases, so does it seem like being a follower of Iowa sports, we're accustomed to, I don't want to say heartbreak, but letdowns, big letdowns? Is that just us? Is that just us as Iowa fans, or is that pretty?
No, I would think anyone who's a passionate fan would feel that way.
But Iowa doesn't win anything is the problem. Like, they don't win championships. That's the problem. In the past 20 years, they've won, what, one Big Ten championship with Kirk? They won two.
I think they were co. Yeah, they were tied. So, yeah, a lot of it is the journey. Obviously, when you get to Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, where basically if you don't win a national championship, it was a terrible season. You don't get to that point quickly. So,
yeah. You think Iowa is going to be the next Alabama?
No, I'm not saying that, but. That's a completely different mindset. I don't want to say they don't enjoy the journey when you reach that point, but part of it has got to be like, let's just kind of skip through this and let's just get to the big games. So, right. I don't know.
I think the 2015, I really do think this. My fandom for Iowa sports, and this is going to sound really pathetic, my fandom for Iowa sports was really shaped by the 2015 Big Ten Championship game. It really was. It was very much shaped by that game. There is not another game in the history. Now, 2009 was probably my all-time favorite season. Because I didn't follow Iowa. I started following Iowa probably 2006. Before that I was playing with Blend Blocks. You know, so it's not like I just wasn't following anything. I just didn't care about football. So 2006, 2007, that time period. 2009 was probably my favorite season. But I would say of games that really stuck with me, Ohio State 2009. James Vandenberg comes in, nearly wins that game without Ricky Stanzi. They lose. He takes the sack in overtime, which was the worst decision to take a sack and push you back, out of field goal range. How do you get out of field goal range when you start at the 25-yard line? That's just bad quarterback play. But that's something Spencer Petras, I could see him doing. But 2009 and then 2010, the fake punt against Wisconsin.
Oh goodness!
That one, I could tell that that one must have stuck with you as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically.
I remember that game like it was yesterday.
Yeah, that was a taking a step back for sure. I mean,
a blunder.
Yeah, I don't think they've beaten Wisconsin since then. Oh, I guess 2015.
But that was kind of a fluke.
Yeah,
and then 2015, It's weird because 2011, very unmemorable for me. If I recall, Vandenberg led them to a inside bowl. They lost to Oklahoma. 12 was obviously pathetic. They had lots of injuries. 13, I remember 13 fondly, which is weird because I don't think a lot of Iowa fans do.
They had a good defense that year.
Well, and I didn't think Rudock was bad. I thought he was okay. I mean, I was never a big bench Rudock, start Beathard guy. And then 14, that bowl game in 14 was bad. And that just, talk about derailing. That was derailing. And, of course, Beathard starts 15.
To show the second string quarterback love, I remember I was at the Penn State game in 2012 where they just got steamrolled by Penn State. Yeah. Sheriff and Donnell both got injured. Back-to-back plays or something. there were people behind me screaming, "Put in Rudock!" And then
Rudock?
Yeah.
See, I don't even remember that Rudock. I guess I never even thought about Rudock being the backup then.
Yeah. Yeah. Vandenberg was the starter and Rudock was the backup. And so, so they were screaming to put him in. And then a couple years later, they're screaming to take him out and put in Beathard. So,
but you know what? They screamed to take out Stanley a lot. There was lots of moments where they screamed to take out Stanley. There were lots of moments where they screamed to take out Stanzi and put Vandenberg in there. Obviously, they did the same with Christensen to put Stanzi in there. It's every quarterback. There's gonna be moments. Now, I do think there are times when it's necessary. Well,
Christensen one was a good idea.
Wasn't he like a 5-star kid? Wasn't he a really highly recruited kid?
He was a high 4-star, I think. So yeah.
Didn't he end up at like Eastern Illinois or something?
Yeah,
that one didn't work out too well. But I do wonder about that with Petras. It's not like, I mean, Christensen was their guy that year, I think, right? He was their undisputed guy.
I think it was, he got the nod over Stanzi, but I don't think it was a far and away thing. Okay. And
then I just wonder, I mean, there's no guarantees that he keeps the job throughout the season. I mean, Ferentz is going to be slow to take him out, but I mean, he's done that before.
If the Hawkeyes were 0-4 right now, I think it'd be a completely different discussion.
Think they take him out?
I think they'd be much more apt to. But the fact that they just changed the game plan and they started winning, I think that they're going to pretty much keep on riding Petras unless he just starts turning into Stanzi when he was throwing pick six all the time. So,
going back to 2015 for a second, that year, I just remember throughout that year, every win piling up and thinking, okay, they're 3-0. Okay, they're 5-0. They're 8-0. And eventually realizing, holy heck, they could run the table here.
Yeah.
I don't know how good that team was. I really don't. I look back at that and I don't think they were very good. I shouldn't say they're very good. They were a good team. I don't know that they were not 12-0 good. I mean, I think.
Well, actually, they were 12-0 good.
Well, they were 12-0 good. They went 12-0. But I look at the schedule. The schedule was, from a Big Ten standpoint, it wasn't real strong. And Wisconsin kind of gave that game away. I mean, again, I'm playing devil's advocate there. They kind of gave that game away up in Madison. And Iowa didn't.
Well, I like the guard for stepping on Joel Stave's foot. I do like that.
Yeah. and Fafa Kake for jumping on it.
Yes.
But exactly. that championship game, so they're 12-0. They go into that title game. I remember we had a big group of people watching it. You know,
I was at the 2015.
Did you go to that game?
Yeah.
What was it like there?
It was pretty much the whole weekend. It was Iowa fans.
Let me ask you this. What was the moment like first play of the fourth quarter? What was that like?
That was awesome. Yeah.
I know what the fan reaction was, but what did it feel like, the electricity in that stadium at that moment?
It was loud. It was loud.
I bet you was.
well, especially with it being a dome. I mean, it was loud.
I just remember on TV just when that play happened, and you could just tell. They pan, if you've watched the replay of that, they pan into the audience, and you can see like fans hugging each other. It's ridiculous, but it was great. It's like a great moment. It's just an iconic moment for them to lose that game. It's just,
yeah. All of a sudden there was hope, and it was okay, we could do this. And
that last drive, good Lord.
That was a killer. I mean, I think for most fans, we're thinking, okay, after about, was it 22 play?
Something like that. Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
After about 12 or 13 plays, I think most fans were like, all right, let's let's hold them here. And then you have LJ Scott bouncing off people and turning around.
Melvin Spears was right there with the ball out, and he goes low. He goes high. That ball probably is a fumble. I just remember that, watching that replay, and I'm like, oh, good Lord. So, that game has really shaped my fandom, because my most memorable moment of my Hawkeye life would have to be that bomb to Tavon Smith. And it's not even close. And then you add in, of course, you were at the game, but you add in Gus Johnson calling that play.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's just priceless. And so losing that game, and then and this is kind of the final thing I want to touch on before we make our predictions for this Penn State game. Iowa has, and this is what I'm afraid, as great as Phil Parker defenses have been, this is what I worry about with the Wisconsin game. And obviously, Wisconsin looks terrific. Again, they've only played two games. But Iowa's defense, as great as it looks this year, has had a history. 2015, you think about, they were a pretty darn good defense that year. They were a good defense in 2017. But they have a problem with allowing late game-winning drives. Even the Purdue game this year. I mean, that was the first game of the year, but they allowed that late drive to Bell. Touchdown pass to Bell. Remember 2015 that you mentioned, the 22 plays or whatever it was, LJ Scott finishes it off to lose that game. 2017, Penn State, Iowa. That's another game that stands out vividly in my mind because of how close that game was. You got Trace McSorley, Saquon Barkley, Josie Jewell versus Saquon the whole game, and they ran like 20 plays down the field, and on fourth down, they converted like two fourth downs, which Michigan State did in 2015 as well. Fourth down, they get the play at the very end. Seems like sometimes Phil Parker's bend-don't-break defense, at the end of a game, sometimes the guys, I don't know if it's just they get so worn out bending that they break at the wrong time. And that's my one fear with that Wisconsin game coming up. I think the rest of the games, Iowa's defense should be fine. But boy, late in the season against a quarterback that looks as good as what's-his-face does up in Madison, that's just going to be an interesting game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was also at the Wisconsin game, was it 2018, with the touched punt that they pretty much gave Wisconsin.
Oh, that game. Let's not go to that game. That game also...
But
they should have won. Can we basically say that every year with Wisconsin? Oh, they should have won that. You know, every year it seems like with Wisconsin, besides like 2013 to 14 when games weren't really close between Melvin Gordon those years. I mean, even 2018, but they had two touchdowns to Fant that year. Hawkinson had a huge game. But let's be honest, it was Kyle Gronewig that lost that game. I mean, I hate to say that. I hate to put it on one guy, but I feel like he basically handed Wisconsin that game. And I blame him for Beyer running into that punt. He allows Beyer to run into the punt, and then he just loses the ball on a punt return where the ball just flies out. If it weren't for those two gaffes, and again, you're right. That long drive at the end of that game was the same way. And not a very good quarterback in Hornibrook, to be completely honest.
Yeah. So,
I don't know. Yeah. Nobody talks about that so much with Iowa football. The defense wearing out sometimes in these really, really big games. It seems like, Penn State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, that's what holds Iowa back.
It does seem like in all of those games, the offense has really struggled. So, because usually if Iowa's offense is playing pretty well, that at least gives the defense enough rest. But in pretty much all the games we've talked about, the offense has hardly moved the ball. It's a lot of three and outs. So, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, a human working hard for a long time, eventually you're just going to get tired and lose something. So,
I think we're all just wanting this offense to be able to sling the ball around and actually put points on the board. I think a lot of people expected 30 to 35 points a game this year, and so far that just hasn't happened. Although the last two games they've been able to do that. So we'll see for Saturday. Let's make our predictions here. So let's just kind of, we're not going to make picks for the rest of college football or even pros, which we sometimes do here on the podcast. But I do want to just kind of run through the Big Ten game Saturday and make our picks for Iowa versus Penn State. Maryland game was canceled this week. So that's a game that's off the docket. Who were they scheduled to play? It was Michigan State. So that game not happening. Let's start tomorrow. Purdue, Minnesota. Minnesota, of course, 1-3. Purdue, 2-1. But, I mean, an Iowa team that I think was different now than they were when they played in week one and they beat Illinois. I don't know what to make of Purdue. Who you got Friday night between the Gophers and the Boilermakers? Who would you pick?
Probably Purdue. They seem to be the most well-rounded team. If Rondell Moore decides to play, that obviously will impact things. But
is he supposed to play? Have you heard anything about that?
Everything's an undisclosed injury, so I don't know what that
means. I've heard hamstring is what I keep hearing, but hamstring's obviously like a lingering issue.
Yeah,
I'd probably go Purdue too. I don't know where Minnesota mentally is right now, and I don't think they have a coach that really. I don't know. I think PJ Fleck. You love him when you're winning, but when you're not, I don't. I can see, you know, he's the type of coach where I think the program can be elevated quickly, like they did last year, and they can fall quickly. And that's kind of what I make of them. So I'd probably go Purdue as well. But if you're an Iowa fan, you're rooting for Minnesota. I mean, that you don't want Purdue to. I mean, if you are looking at the West from a perspective of we can, Iowa can still win the West, you're rooting for Minnesota in that game. Illinois, Nebraska. I think Nebraska is better than people maybe think they are right now. That'll be 11 a.m. Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Nebraska beat Penn State. Now, granted, that might not mean anything with Penn State playing the way they have been, but I don't think Illinois has much. Are they still on like their fourth string quarterback?
I think they've got Brandon Peters back, and their quarterback play. If you think Iowa's quarterback play has been bad, theirs have been. It's been really bad.
Yeah.
So I would go. I will go Nebraska there as well. Michigan Rutgers. That's kind of an intriguing game now. I don't think anybody. I remember probably 4 or 5 years ago that game was. I think Michigan had like 300 total yards and Rutgers had like -10. I remember that was one of the most lopsided games I'd ever seen. I'd probably go Rutgers right now. I think Michigan is a spiraling mess right now, and I think the Scarlet Knights have something right now with Schiano.
I would have to go Michigan, and you would think that just by sheer talent that they'd be able to beat Rutgers. The Michigan State thing game was against Rutgers was I don't understand. I don't know how you can have 7 turnovers. So I don't think all of a sudden Rutgers is a team to beat. They're definitely playing better, but I would think Michigan could at least Rutgers, find out a way to win.
Yeah, Rutgers got shut out by Indiana, right? I think last week. But they, or 2 weeks ago, they did compete with Ohio State. I mean, I know that sounds like I'm placating. That was, I think, 55-24 or something like that. Now, that sounds lopsided. But normally, it'd be like 55-0 or 61-0.
They did score
points. They scored points against Ohio State. I don't know if you caught some of those trick plays. They ran like 2 or 3 trick plays where they were, you'll have to look at this stuff if you haven't seen it, on like punt returns, and they're throwing the, like a couple of them, they threw the ball lateraled it all the way across the field. One, they ran back for a touchdown against Ohio State. So I think Rutgers has, I'm not saying they're going to win the East ever, but I'm just saying, I think their future is, right now, their future is brighter than probably Michigan State. Or
you do have them beating Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, it's a home game. Yeah, I think Michigan's favored by 7.5. Yeah, I'd go Rutgers. I mean, what has Michigan State done? They blow out a really bad Minnesota team. They get completely manhandled by Wisconsin. They get beat by a terrible Michigan State team, who, by the way, lost to Rutgers. Yeah. I'm just saying, I would not be shocked. And if they lose to Rutgers, I don't know how you keep Harbaugh through the rest of the season. To me, he's either going to resign or I don't know if they fire him. But boy, I really do. I'm picking Rutgers there.
Well, it will
be an interesting game to see. That's going to be what's funny is that's going to be the showcase game on BTN at 6:30. And those two teams are combined 2-6. number 10, Wisconsin, number 19, Northwestern, 2:30 PM on ABC. Now I've delved into this. If you're an Iowa fan, now this should be easy for you. You should know this. Who are you rooting for in this game? I think it's very obvious. Okay, yeah. Good. I'm glad you had you got that one right. There's no question about it because Northwestern's got, what, four games left? And I think they play Illinois in one of them, which I can't imagine. Now, it's a rivalry, so maybe Illinois gets up for that game. But they don't play anybody. So Wisconsin, of course, would need to lose one more game in addition to the Iowa game for Iowa to finish ahead of them. But Northwestern plays at Michigan State, at Minnesota, home Illinois. Right now, those three teams are terrible. So, I mean, yeah. You need what you desperately need. If you're an Iowa fan, you desperately need Wisconsin to win Saturday. And they probably will. Who are you taking in that one?
I mean, yeah, I definitely go Wisconsin. I mean, Northwestern seemed not great, but decent. I mean, they're already, what, 4-0, so yeah. You can't fault them for that. But Wisconsin definitely seems a lot more dynamic.
Yeah, Northwestern. I don't know if you watched any of that Purdue Northwestern game last week, but we were out of town, and I was watching that game, following it, and that was one of the most frustrating games because I basically knew, as an Iowa fan, I was sitting there thinking, you know, if Northwestern wins this game, Iowa's basically out of the West race. I mean, they really needed Purdue to win last week because, I mean, and Purdue just is so, that's what's so frustrating watching that game. Northwestern never really pulled away. But that game was a perfect indication that Purdue's not that good. Purdue's not that good. They've got they're down their best player. They were down their number one running back. How Iowa lost to them, I have no clue. They are so one-dimensional. They throw the ball 50 times every time they play. It doesn't matter what the other team is doing. They throw the ball 50 times. They targeted Bell. It had to have been like 30 times. It was ridiculous. So
I can't understand why they lost that either, because at the end of the game, they should have known who was getting the ball. Actually, throughout the whole game, they should have known who was getting the ball.
Instead, they lined up Barrington Wade to defend. Well,
that had to have been...
No, it was a mistake. It was definitely a missed assignment by somebody. I don't think it's probably Wade's fault. But don't you just... This is my only... I don't want to get on another tangent, because I'm getting about ready to pass out here. But... when you look at Phil Parker and Kirk, and I don't know if it's more Phil or more Kirk, the one thing they're stubborn with is they don't like moving corners across the field. They want to keep the corners on the same side of the field, which to me, I would say, who's the best corner? Who's playing the best in practice? Who's playing the best during games? You're on Bell every play, and we're going to have a safety help you over the top every play. That play, they had nobody. It's like, wouldn't that be the first thing you'd say in the huddle is, who's got Bell? You stay on him and do not lose sight of him no matter what. He's sitting in the end zone wide open. And Wade and Belton or whoever it was are looking at each other like, oh, you were supposed to, you know. Belton or Wade, neither of those guys should have to be assigned to guarding Bell. So, anyways, I will go Wisconsin in that game. Indiana, North Ohio State, that's the game everybody's looking at. Indiana's number 9 in the country. They're 4-0, beat Penn State, but again, I don't know how good Penn State is this year. They beat Rutgers. They beat Michigan, but Michigan's not very good. Does Indiana have a good win on the schedule right now?
Well, I don't know how many good wins there are. I mean, general, in college football, has been completely different there because, I mean, there seems like it's a lot more parity. But Indiana does seem like they're playing pretty well, and they're not necessarily just squeaking by. They seems like they've had pretty dominant performances for Indiana, I guess. So I would think that they would put up a fight against Ohio State, but is it at Ohio State or at?
It's at Ohio State.
Yeah, I don't think that they're going to beat Ohio State.
Again, I don't think there's much of a home field advantage.
True. Yeah.
I would be shocked if Indiana beats Ohio State. Now they're a top five team, aren't they? Team in the country.
Yeah, I would think they'd have to be.
Is there any way that they're one of the five best teams in the country? Anyway.
Well, if they just beat Ohio State, yes.
Just beat Ohio State. That'll be interesting. Ohio State's favored by 20 and a half.
Against the number,
against the number 19. Number 9 undefeated Big Ten team, and they're favored by 20 and a half. That's startling. All right. Yeah, I'm going Ohio State there as well. I'd love to see Indiana win. I mean, it doesn't really affect Iowa at all. So, all right, Iowa-Penn State, 230. Iowa's favored by 2.5, which I find interesting. Obviously, home field advantage is usually an automatic, I think, 3 points on the road, but or for the home team. I don't know if that comes into play with the odds makers this year because of COVID. Yeah. Iowa is projected to win. ESPN FPI has them winning. Sean Clifford hasn't looked good. He got benched last week, and I think I don't remember his last or first name. Is it Levis or Levis?
Will Levis, so, I think.
So we assume he's going to be the starter, but I don't think Penn State's tipped their cap one way or the other on that. Yeah. Penn State's obviously down Noah Kane. They're down their other top running back, whose name escapes me because of a heart issue.
Journey Brown.
So I think they've got Devin Ford as their main running back now. I don't really know what to make of this team because I don't think they're 0-4 bad. But if you had to give one key for Iowa to go in there and win for the first time since, 2010, what would it be?
My guess would be on off. I mean, Penn State's offense does not look very coherent. So I'm not too concerned with Penn State's offense versus Iowa's defense. My biggest concern is the Penn State loading up the box and doing run blitzes pretty much the whole game and basically telling Spencer Petras that he's going to have to beat them with his arm, since he has not shown that this year. So if I was a betting man, that's what I would bet of what they're going to do. So I would think they have to run the ball or at least be somewhat coherent running the ball. And then Petras is going to have to not turn the ball over and at least make enough easy throws to move the ball and hopefully get touchdowns instead of field goals. I mean, that would be my guess.
Right now, Iowa actually leads the Big Ten in rush yards per attempt. Is that surprising to you?
Yeah, well, I mean, not necessarily after that Minnesota game because they were getting about 10 yards a pop. But
well, there's been three other teams that have played Minnesota, though, too. So,
yeah, that's true.
You know,
That does surprise me at rushes per or yards per attempt because, I mean, they've been doing pretty well, but usually either Wisconsin or Ohio State or some other team usually tends to be one of the top ones for rushing. But
yeah, and I mean, that's 5.4 yards per carry. Penn State, let me find Penn State's here. So Penn State right now, offensively, is 9th in the conference. Yards per rush. Of course, they've had a lot of problems running back wise with injuries. Defensively, they are one of the better. They're not one. Let's see here. Yeah, they are one of the better rush defenses. They're allowing just 3.6 yards per carry. Iowa, meanwhile, is the best run team according to yards per attempt. They're also the best rush defense for yards per attempt, and it's not even close defensively. The next closest team, Iowa's allowing just 2.8 yards per rush. The next closest is Indiana at 3.5. And everybody else is, besides Minnesota, is between 3.5 and 4.9. So, I mean, rushing the football, Iowa should have the huge advantage there. Penn State, I mean, again, they're averaging, 3.8 yards per rush. At, you know, you combine that with Iowa. I mean, Penn State should not. If Penn State's got over 100 yards in this game on the ground, Iowa's in trouble, I think, because I agree with you. I think they're going to run blitz the Iowa running game, and Iowa's going to have to just shut. It's going to be a low score. I would be very surprised. I saw this against Minnesota too. I'd be very surprised if it's a high scoring game. I mean, I just and normally Penn State Iowa isn't a high scoring game. I mean, when's the last time we've seen a high scoring game between Iowa and Penn State? Iowa got blown out by Penn State in 2016. Yeah, that was the game they right before the Michigan game.
Yeah, 15, yeah.
But every other game's been, you know, 2017. Last year was close. 2018 was close. So, yeah, 2018 was the messy game on the. That was another game that stands out with Stanley throwing the interception by the goal line. Anyways,
yeah, that was
If I was to say a key to this game, it's obviously going to be rushing the football is going to be the key every week. I said that last week. I'll continue to say that every week, but. I really do think if I'm going to feel comfortable with this game, it's Petras coming out in the first half, completing 75% of his balls, not turning the ball over. If he can just manage the game without turnovers and with a higher completion percentage than 50, which is terrible. I mean, come on, he had 50% against Minnesota. That's not good. If he can at least be 60 or over with no turnovers for the game, especially first half, and then they can. You know, I think the running game should be able to salt the game away in the second half, I would hope. I just keep going back to quarterback play. I just think Iowa's going to have to be – they don't have to be great at quarterback. They just have to be average, and right now they're below average. So.
Yep, I agree.
So that game will be, again, Saturday, the 21st, 2:30 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. Final score, you want to make a prediction?
For Iowa-Penn State? I will say Iowa 24, Penn State 14.
24-14, okay. So that's a fairly comfortable win.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the last couple weeks they've gotten off to good starts. And they've actually scored more than I was anticipating, because usually I was in pretty close games all the time. So that gave me some confidence. The Penn State that I watched the other day did not look coherent. So
they looked better though with Levis at quarterback, but you know.
Well,
they're not Penn State of what we're used to. Great football weather, by the way, Saturday, 54 degrees. Partly cloudy. I don't know about wind, but should be a good weather game. We've had some messy, rainy games at University Park in past years. I think about 2009, the Adrian Claiborne block field goal return for a touchdown. That was a rainy game. 2008.
That was an iconic play.
Yeah. That was the last time they won it at University, at State College.
Really?
So, or not State College. Is it State College?
Yeah.
That's the last time they won there. I mean, because 2010 was their last win. I think I'm right on that. 2010 was their last win, and they didn't play Penn State for several years, but the 2010 was at home. That was a game where, remember, Sean Prater had a pick six, because that was a stretch where Iowa was dominating Penn State. I mean, 2008, yeah. 2010, they didn't lose. So it's been a while, but that'll be, again, 2:30 p.m. Saturday, Big Ten Network from University Park, Pennsylvania. So anything else to add for basketball, football, anything? You're on the verge of setting the record for the longest podcast in the history of our show. So when you said at the beginning of the show that we might go on rants, you didn't really go on any rants. We just kind of droned on and on. So and you know what, honestly, if I had had your dad on here, it probably would have been the same thing. So we probably would have been on here for 2 hours. So anything to add on any of these? Either sport.
What's your prediction for the score for Penn State Iowa?
Oh, I didn't make that prediction. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I hate to say this because I've predicted higher scores every game, but I have a feeling it's going to be something like 17-15. I'll say okay. Here's my exact prediction. Penn State scores one touchdown. Field goal, and then Petras takes a sack in the end zone for a safety. That's totally a That's totally a at Penn State type thing to happen. Yeah. I don't know if you remember 2018, the game they lost. You probably do because you've kind of got the same type of memories I do. But there were two bad snaps for Penn State that both ended in safeties. You remember that?
Yeah.
Two safeties in the same game. It's also the same game where Iowa ran the fake field goal where they throw was the big lineman they threw to. Oh man, I can't think of his name now. I can look picture his face.
Brinks.
Yes, Sam Brinks. Over his shoulder, he made a beautiful catch.
Yeah.
And then that was also the
How
game.
How did they lose that game? They had to
tell you where they. Well, Stanley couldn't complete a pass until the last drive. He had a thumb in. He had hit guy on one of the passes. Pass plays. He had hit a guy's helmet with his thumb. Messed up his thumb. He couldn't throw the ball, and it was rainy. And I don't know if you remember that before that pass play where he injured his thumb. There was a, and you can look this up. There was a play, and I'm sure you remember it. There was a play, I think, in like the second quarter where, and you've seen Iowa this, we've seen Iowa get this play blown up before too. So it has been times where it hasn't worked, but Iowa faked it, a play action fake. I think it was to Sargent, play action fake to Sargent. And Stanley did that little thing where he puts the ball behind his back. You know, it's just a beautiful fake, and everybody converged on Sargent, and Hawkinson was wide open, nobody around within 10 yards. And Stanley just airmails it over him, like, by 10 or 15 yards. And I just remember Stanley, they showed Stanley, and he was just like deer in the headlights. That got in his head that game. I mean, you could just see he was just shocked at what just happened. And I don't think he ever recovered.
I think if that play would have connected, it would have been a completely different game.
That game was, I mean, remember, Penn State, like I said, handed Iowa 4 points off two different safeties. They also got a pick six from Geno Stone in that game. And the only reason they lost the game, they were all over Trace McSorley in that game. I think they knocked him out.
Yeah.
He
came back and ran for like a 50-yard touchdown.
Yeah. But as you'll recall, the most iconic play in that game was Iowa had finally had a drive where Stanley was completing passes to Fant. That was one of those games where Fant would just disappeared the whole game. It's like he wasn't even playing. And then all of a sudden, the last drive, they're throwing to him every play. Let's go. They get down the field to the 30. Sargent's juking guys. They get inside the 10 at the 7-yard line. And they might have been actually inside the 5. It might have been like the 4. I think they had a completion of Brandon Smith down inside the 5. First down and 10, and there's you can watch there's a replay on YouTube from a fan standpoint, a camera from the stand. You can see, I think it was Brian Ferentz, or maybe it was Kirk, running down the sidelines trying to call a timeout because the clock was running down. Stanley, instead of calling a timeout, panics and snaps the ball and throws it to no one, and it's picked off for the game.
Well, Ferentz wasn't looking when it was high.
It was going like this off to, I think it was Smith. He was calling off the play, and Stanley just panicked and snapped it, threw it in the direction of Fant. Torrin Young was in the area too, but I think it was meant for Fant, which is a stupid pass. But it was just a terrible play overall, and that was the game. I mean, that was the game. It was first and goal at like the 4, and they were down 6.
Yep.
So are you still standing by what you said earlier that Iowa fans aren't unique in always having their hearts ripped out in games? Because I think Iowa fans are extremely unique. Seems like it happens every year. Something stupid like that. So I don't know. It'll be an interesting game, and whether Penn State's 0-5 after this game or not, that doesn't take away. If you can win at Penn State, I think any year you've got to chalk that up as a good win. And I think they'll get Penn State's best effort in this game. I just can't imagine them coming out and laying an egg, but I could be totally wrong on that. So,
well, Penn State might be giving up on their season already.
You think they're a team that would give up James Franklin? I mean, just the way he is as a coach.
0-4 when you have high expectations is tough. So
it's going to be one or the other. I think it's either going to be they just have totally given up or they've rallied.
Yeah.
there's talk about Franklin being on the hot seat. I don't buy into it. I don't think he's on the hot seat. But there is talk about him being in jeopardy of losing his job this year. So, their star tight end, Freiermuth, was a guy that had originally opted out. I think he had opted out, and then he opted back in. So, you know, you wonder, if a guy like that, why would you continue to play if you're 0-7? I mean, you know, if they get to that point. So you wonder at what point that is where he just says, I'm not going to get hurt. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I'd like to see them get Ivory Kelly Martin involved a little bit more. He is not really seeming to, I mean, I understand they've got two really good running backs ahead of him, but it'd be nice to see him get some carries. But yeah, I mean, Iowa should win this game, but I just hope that Petras, I would love, wouldn't it be great to see Petras come out there and throw for like 400 yards and just be slinging it all over the field? Like you thought he was going to do. I mean,
yeah, just pretend it's the hype video.
Just pretend it's,
throw it to Charlie Jones deep, and then everything will be okay.
Maybe they need to run. You know, you notice that I understand that they Minnesota punted away from him all day, but maybe they need to get Charlie Jones more involved in offensive sets. Did he have a single offensive play last week?
I don't think so. I think they should give him the ball more.
Yeah, he seems to be. I think he. You know who he reminds me of. A slightly quicker, I'm not saying he's a better receiver, but he kind of reminds me of Matt Vandenberg. Like, just from a standpoint of, now Vandenberg kind of declined after his injury, but better than you would think. Like, I never looked at Vandenberg as a freshman and thought, boy, he's going to be Iowa's number one receiver someday. And he ended up being Iowa's number one receiver someday. And Charlie Jones kind of got that same thing. He just more athletic and faster than you would think, and he seems to have good hands at least on punt returns. So
yeah,
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. But they got wide receivers out the wazoo. They just got to actually get the ball to them. So, all right.
Just out of curiosity, has Oliver Martin done anything for Nebraska? Have you heard?
I think he just got cleared last week.
Oh, okay.
And I don't think he recorded any stats that I'm aware of.
Okay.
That's another weird thing. Looking back at that, to me, it's easy to see now the reason he left was because of Charlie Jones. It'd be my guess, don't you think? Because
it makes sense, yeah.
Because he came in behind Tracy Reganey, Smith, and Smith-Marset. But you look at it and you say, okay, Smith and Smith-Marset are going to be gone after this year. Oliver Martin's next man in. And I just wonder if Charlie Jones, during bowl prep, began to leapfrog Oliver Martin to a point where, you know, he's getting jumped by the fifth string wide receiver, I might as well walk on. Yeah, not even on scholarship yet. So I don't know. That's what I wonder. And it's too bad. I wish Oliver Martin could have had success here. I mean, it's such a weird story. And of course, nobody's ever going to say what exactly the reason was, but I don't even think he's on scholarship in Nebraska. I don't think he's walking on there.
Yeah, my understanding. Right. Yeah.
It's just a sad situation.
That doesn't make any sense from a financial point of view. Why would you pay?
Well, he's not playing at Iowa, but he's not playing at Iowa. So if he really thinks he's got a shot at the NFL, which do you really think he's got a shot at the NFL now?
Not if he doesn't have any college tape. No.
By the way, one other quick note before we end this: do you remember You remember Zach McCabe, right?
Very rarely. Yeah. Very little. Yeah.
At basketball.
Yeah.
He played quite a bit, but he got in trouble on Twitter cause he went off on some fans. And, that's, I think, why McCaffrey banned Twitter for that season for the student athletes. But, I had a sit down with Gary Dolphin one time. Him and I were sitting at some bar and grill just chatting. And he said to me, did you know that Zach McCabe got called up by the Seattle Seahawks to play tight end? They wanted to try him out at tight end. And I looked at him, I'm like, are you messing with me? He said, no, they really did. Did you ever hear that?
No.
Because you're talking about, how did I get on the subject? You're talking about Oliver Martin not having any tape.
Yeah.
But I'm just amazed that the Seahawks would be interested in Zach McCabe, who wasn't a very good basketball player, and they're going to try him out at tight end. My thinking on that is, why the heck was he playing basketball? If he had that sort of a I don't know, pedigree in football, why the heck was he playing basketball? Of course, he never got signed to the Seahawks, but
yeah,
I just thought that was funny. And then I trusted Gary. I mean, why would Gary Dolphin lie about something like that? So, anyways. All right. Well, that will do it for our... we're going to call this the... what should we call this? The... I got to think of a name for this because it's almost like a novel, how long this...
The never-ending podcast?
Yeah. The never-ending... That's just what it's called, the never-ending podcast. All right. Well, we will end it there. For Eric Sells, I'm Corey Brada. Thank you for listening to our Week 136 podcast. We'll be back for Week 137. Hopefully talking about an Iowa win against Penn State this Saturday and previewing what will be a Black Friday showdown with Nebraska, which, by the way, is another dual Hawkeye day, you could call it, because Iowa plays basketball in the afternoon and, well, they play football in the afternoon followed by a basketball game. So we're right back in the heart of Hawkeye season starting this next week. We will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to Week 136 from the Hawkeye of the Storm and Brad's Branded Thoughts. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks.